to 90.1 FM, kpft.org worldwide.
You're listening to KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Technology Bites next.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites. That will be December the 10th, the year 2014. That's today.
Hold on.
Unless you're listening to the podcast or one of the syndications.
The rebroadcast, yeah.
This is last week.
No, today is December 10th, so get ready for Christmas. Whenever you're listening, Christmas is only a couple of weeks away.
Or just passed.
Yeah, do you have the stuff to hook your laptop up to the board with you?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to Skype.
Because you could, yeah, because I don't feel right if I don't Skype it. No, because there's a sound file on the front page of geekradio.com that we'd like to get on the air at some point.
Didn't they find MP3 boarding a form of torture? At least let's not be doing that anymore.
Well, first of all, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Lee Hutchinson has
he has some kind
guy.
Of real job or something.
He let us he claims real job. we finally got
or
rid
life,
of him.
You know. We're still checking out his geek credentials then, since he
so
may
just,
have a job and
he's
a
just
life
on a trial
and
basis, right? I mean, we're just trying.
We
him
could
out
ditch him any time. I'll tell him what I told
he
Pete.
Ditched us tonight. I can't believe that. I was all looking forward to seeing
no,
Lee.
No, and we dumped him.
Okay, that's how it is. That's how it works. That's our story.
No, we left him. No, he's a
he's at the Geek Radio surprise party that's at another location.
Well, he'll be back next week, allegedly, but
now, when do you leave? You're going to go find...
I'm flying to London next week, so on Wednesday.
Meeting the Doctor, save Christmas,
I'm gonna meet
that kind
all
of thing?
Yeah, we're going to meet Doctor Who and whichever one it is now. Because it's
the new one. Although, you know, Christmas special, anything could happen.
They've already filmed it, I understand.
Oh, yeah, okay, never mind. I know Santa Claus is going to be in it. I've seen, like, one little trailer.
Santa Claus?
Played by Nick Frost. Now, there's an actor
who's...
from Shaun of the Dead.
His name's actually Nick Frost?
His name is
he
Nick Frost.
He should play Santa Claus. That's
and
the
he
role
did
he was
play
born
Santa
for.
Claus
oh, that's
at
awesome.
The end of the season, at the season-ending episode.
Spoiler alert! Come on, I haven't seen that.
Oh,
that's him? Okay, that was, so that's the end of the spoiler. That is going to be the Christmas special, I believe.
Right. So yes. They were leading into the. They were.
So it's going to be Cornetto trilogy.
I'm still back.
Santa Claus has a bit of red on him.
I'm still in the David Tennant Doctor Who.
Oh, you've got a lot of pain coming your way.
Really?
Two? Isn't it two?
No, Tennant was followed by. Well, yeah. There are two doctors since then.
Well, we had Eccleston first.
Yep, and then Tennant. And then you're going to have to move to, I forget his
name.
Matt Smith.
We're in season three right now, I think.
Yeah, you've got...
Plus there's the War Doctor.
The War Doctor.
The Day of the Doctor.
And then there's the 12th one, Peter Capaldi.
Yeah.
Scottish.
Although I'm thinking that...
He's a really good actor.
I may have to watch the current Christmas special... when it comes out, if it comes out before.
You need to watch. If you're going to be there, I would go do it. And I don't think that it's usually it doesn't affect the big plot line. It's not going to be a spoiler. You know there's already a new doctor coming. It's fine.
Yeah, I know.
I would do it. Yeah. That's an awesome, awesome opportunity.
All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in. We're glad you're here tonight. We're winding our way down towards the Christmas season. We've got two more shows after this one, right? We're gonna do the seventh. One more for the year.
This is the penultimate show for Technology Bites.
Yes, and we are...
as our Christmas present to you is a different show on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, you'll get Ray Hill on Christmas Eve and on New Year's Eve. He'll be doing some special programming. We'll be enjoying the holidays ourselves, and we'll be back next year, and it'll be great. So. Yay. Visit us online at geekradio.com. That is where all the information is about the show. You can also join the IRC right from the webpage, IRC Internet Relay Chat. It's the show within a show. And if you want to use your own client, just fire up your IRC client and join the server irc.cuckoo.com. Although if you'll notice, cuckoo.com is now just an alias for FlightAware.
Cuckoo.
It's owned by Daniel Baker from FlightAware. He's the one that gave us the IRC.
Can you do that?
Server. What?
Cuckoo. Instead of saying cuckoo, say FlightAware.
FlightAware.
So Daniel Baker owns FlightAware?
Yeah.
Tom Baker?
I didn't realize.
The old Doctor Who guy, Tom Baker?
Not Tom Baker.
No wonder he could afford those extra 3 feet of scarf. That's awesome.
The drummer from Cream?
It's Daniel Baker and Carl Leonbauer. Are the principals of that the old NeoSoft gang. So, yes. Anyway, so I was looking at people who are joining the IRC and seeing what servers they were on, and they were all FlightAware servers. So, anyway, if you do have your own IRC client, you can join irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And join the channel Tech Bites.
Tech Bites. And watch us fly across the country.
Yes, you can plot our course.
Yeah.
You'll know where we're landing if we've been delayed. Yeah.
So. Currently on time.
Currently on time. So, so visit us at the web. Go to the IRC. If you want to call in, we're only taking interesting calls. So you're going to have to really try. If you're going to call in, you know, and ask out for support on your Palm device, we may not be so interested in that. But as we talk about different subjects... about different tech and geek things during the course of the show tonight, you're welcome to join the conversation or even try to steer it in a different direction, because we're kind of having an open roundtable discussion here on Technology Bites. That's the way we're kind of gearing the show now, to try to bring more content and information. It was just, you know, you can only solve spyware problems for so long.
We've passed the torch to Google.
Yeah,
it was time.
We have. We're no longer going to be the Google show unless we have to Google something.
Yes, we'll have to play you the Stack Overflow version of the show that we tried offline, and it just didn't work.
I suppose there's a good joke in there somewhere.
I guess you don't use Stack Overflow.
I don't, but I've seen it recently. So what? Tell me about is that the open source or is that the code?
It's basically a ask questions nowadays. I'm trying to remember what the site was before it. There used to be a site that if you put in a that may be why I see it more. But it used to be that when you put in a sort of a computer question, there were certain sites that had a lot of kind of Q&As on them that popped up high in it. And nowadays, if you put in, when you take and like copy an error, a server error,
and paste
it in, Stack Overflow shows up usually fairly high up.
I get frustrated with those sites. I don't know if Stack Overflow is one of the ones that. But there's a lot of tech support websites online these days. So like if you Google search an error, you'll find these sites where somebody posts a question.
And they cover up the answer.
Well,
unless you pay or
yeah, don't. There's those too. But worse than that are the ones where like somebody might post a question. It's like I've got a MacBook Pro, 2012 MacBook Pro, and I'm getting this particular error. And has anybody seen that before? And then somebody will answer and say, well, I've never used a Mac before, and I've never had that problem. And you might try, and then they'll suggest something that has absolutely nothing right. to do with the wow. problem. So you have to, like, sift through a whole bunch of credit. There's a few websites that are starting to do, like Microsoft, for example, not to say too many nice things about Microsoft, but Microsoft will, on their forums, if you find somebody asks a question, they will actually promote the answer to the top that actually solved the problem.
Stack Overflow is kind of like that. You register an account and you can answer different things. And as people vote you up, you get higher ranked. And actually, I know a lot of people will actually go, at, you know, for hiring developers, actually go and look where someone's ranked on Stack Overflow. Because a lot of it's, you know, like, hey, I'm having trouble. You know, I think it started out for writing code for developers. It's like, I'm having trouble with this kind of function or this kind of inheritance, or I'm doing this with my class. What's the best way? And people would come in and even do code snippets. Then we get voted up. And I even remember back in the day, like, getting called by friends saying, hey, can you upvote my Stack Overflow thing? Before, you know, they're going in for a job interview in a week, and they wanted to look really good on the net. So I'm like, okay.
Well, but yeah, Stack Overflow does have – there's one that is usually the answer. Mm-hmm. I think there's sort of a karma type vote up for the
everyone can vote it up or vote it down, and that's what dictates your karma. So that's why you want to give really high-quality answers, and you get a good reputation. It's ripped off from Slashdot.
And I think also the person who submitted the question –
the question can choose an answer
can
as
choose
the correct
one
answer.
As the answer, and that shows up as the very first one.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, yeah, they don't have the problem of the people who don't know what they're talking about posting on the question. Their problem is sometimes the people who know way too much, mm-hmm. where it's sort of like, if we go back to the original, you know, the first compiler, then we could, you know, kind of.
It's Carl Sagan. It's like, how do you bake an apple pie? How do you make an apple pie from scratch? He's like, first you create the universe. It's like, all right.
Yeah,
thanks,
Carl. They'll get into
you
like.
You need to turn your mic up, I think, a little bit. You're awfully quiet or muddy, or just maybe it's just me. Maybe I can hear everybody in here so good, but I can't hear. There you are. Okay, better. It was me. It's not you.
You're hot enough, Licked.
They'll get into arguments about, like, all kinds of minutia about the best way to solve a problem, you know, and sometimes it gets down to just opinion, but they're very, very, very sure of their view being the correct one, and so they'll go back and forth about stuff.
Well, you've got, I mean, a lot of them are developers. You've got, not all of them are prima donnas, but all of them come with just a small slice of ego because of what they've done and, you know, what their abilities are.
That's
so
because
I think
they all
a lot
got
of
hired
heads.
For a position that said rock star and went to their head. Or ninja, one or the other.
So we've successfully explained the background to our first joke of the evening.
that's the new format of the show. We're going to tell a joke, and then we're going to explain it, and then give the backstory. It's like knowyourmeme.com. Like if you start to see something show up a whole lot, if you can kind of figure out what it is, like, you know, the fist pump baby. So you do fist pump baby meme, and you'll find the Know Your Meme, and it'll have the whole history of the meme of that particular photo and why it's been captioned or
if it's
captioned.
Debunked if they found who was the original person in there, which is really neat.
Snopes your meme, dog.
Yes. Although yes. Well, no, it's odd, a lot of people like the I forget what it is, the I recall her as the Starbucks girl, but she's the Goosebumps books girl. Do you remember that? It's she's the girl that has three books and she's like, oh my god, Goosebumps.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And she has, you know, big braces and glasses and hair. Some girls stepped forward, a few people stepped forward saying, hey, I'm that girl. And they weren't. They just wanted some internet fame. So there have been people that have had to come in and, you know, do like facial recognition. A lot of it happens on Reddit or on, you know, a few of the channels, but they'll actually debunk, you know, these people and say, yes, that's him, yes, that's her. Nope, liar, liar. So it's kinda interesting. Because none of these people, most of these memes, they're not, someone doesn't say, hey, I'm gonna take a picture of me and put it on, it's gonna become a meme.
Right.
Bill Cosby tried that. We we see what happens from that place. You know, they're just like found pictures that someone finds something with, and a lot of times they don't realize they're huge until it comes back and they see themselves on the internet.
You know, get like, an email from their uncle with their with somebody else with their, you know, picture they took, or
That kind of thing happens quite a lot, and it can go horribly wrong, because like I've seen where you know, not necessarily a meme, but like photographs, like somebody somebody who is a wedding photographer that photographed gay weddings for one of their gay wedding photos turned into a billboard for anti-gay move, you know, some kind of anti-gay thing from some church or whatever. So they,
although that's sort of perfect, because then they can sue them for the copyright infringement, right? Or did he get to?
They can, you can
try to. Well, just be, you can hassle them and get some publicity, maybe.
But a friend of mine, Katya Horner, a friend of Groove House of mine, she's a really good local photographer here, and she takes these really great landscape photographs, like, you know, of a whole bunch of fall colors and maybe a river running through it and some deer. And people grab her photos and put text, you know, inspirational text on it and send it around. And, you know, when somebody does that on Facebook, it's hard to, you know, when you're trying to track down the origins of who's taken a photograph and memed it, you know, who gets credit for that or who's responsible for doing that, belongs to the internet now.
Yeah, and you're very unlikely to find who the original crook was.
But I would like to, I think we should, you know, you could probably just take credit for some things, like I invented lolcats, or I created the word rufflecopter.
Al Gore invented the internet.
Yeah. You got to have, like, grandchildren for that so that you can tell them fake stories
like
that.
In my day, yeah, I was one that...
Very, very early, I'm sure everyone did this, but very early on, we were misspelling T as T-E-H-N-I-R-C, like 20 years ago. That's what we think our contribution is, but you know, you never know.
Oh, you're T-E-H. You're misspelling the.
Yeah, and a lot of it's weird. So a lot of it, like a lot of the small pockets of IRC talk that we had, and I'm sure it's just because everyone was talking, but we always, you know, there were small groups, and we thought, oh, we just use this in our group, and then once the internet happened, it's like, oh wow, everyone else is using that too.
Well, it's hard to find. It's hard to figure out when you see T-E-H if somebody's doing it as speak or if they just really typoed it.
I don't like it because my spell check always tries to make it back into T-H-E, so it's like I just finally kind of gave it up.
Some of them you can modify so that it'll actually
convert
all.
Yeah, I've had to add it to the dictionary before.
Of course,
yeah.
Then you'll write some paper for work or something important, a memo that you send out, and it's all...
I've gotten too old. I used to do it kind of ironically in text, but now I think it just looks silly, so I've cut that out.
That's on the intranet for one of the you know, the company I work for. We have you know, several different companies that have merged together, and one of the companies that we merged with, their intranet site, like ours was intra.netIQ, then there was intranet for one company, but the one company, Novell, calls it interweb. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of ironic, but...
I think they stole that from us making fun of it, too. I mean, that was an old idiom, you know, from early days of the internet.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So they ripped that off. Or someone there just heard it and thought it was cute, and they co-opted it.
Well, you mentioned talking about the old days of the internet and talking about Reddit. One of the things that's been interesting to me, I'm not a Redditor, but I do I go to pop URLs, so I just kind of skim the top page stuff of a bunch of sites. But one of the things with Reddit that has been striking to me is when you click into something that's on the front page of Reddit. So that's arguably the stuff that's got the most attention and popular. The discussion threads on it are actually very civilized. I'm sure that I know that there are subreddits that you can go to that are as horrible as the rest of the internet, but it is sort of surprising. I don't know if it's that they have moderators who work that hard or what, but I've noticed that it really is. It's sort of the internet chat board, or, you know, bulletin board equivalent of like this show. You know, nobody's on here like slamming you, you're an idiot kind of stuff.
Not to
on
our face.
they're mostly, you can just see mostly as you read it, it's like the thing that I like is when I read it and I think of the snarky or funny thing I would say to post it, and then you read the next thing down and somebody said it. And so it's kind of, you know, people trying to sort of one-up each other that way, which is a positive thing.
Reddit's good. A lot of sites can actually be straight-up hostile to people asking for help. You know, and some of them are funny. Like, the funny ones I like, you know, when people go into FARC and say, like, hey, can someone help me take the red eye out of this? So people actually, like, you know, Photoshop out the eyes or turn the eyes green or just, you know, just totally take this idea of request and just, you know, just totally spin it around. And a lot of the hacker boards, too, like, even on Facebook, people will come in and ask a question, just get hated on for 400 comments just because it's like... don't know, it's looked down. It's still kind of looked down in some circles not to know things, and people don't necessarily want to help you out.
Well,
but that's kind of more
like
upper echelon.
Like, ask me anything with celebrities where you would think is a magnet for trolls actually do, you can, you know, it tends to, I think partly because the stuff that's good bubbles up. But it seems like they don't have a lot of trollery, which that has always been – that's been a challenge since Usenet. You know, when you think back, I mean, there were whole Usenet areas that just were – it was worthless to go there because they were just targets for outsiders who had no interest in whatever the real subject was or, you know. I mean, there was the funny, the alt Bigfoot stuff where it was them, you know, their whole – reason for living was to like warp and change mm-hmm. other areas as a form of entertainment, but the ones where they just go into wreck it, you know, that seems to be, you know, the kind of trollery stuff. It's a version of,
I like this word, trollery.
I've not yet heard that before. We're going to claim trollery. Right,
trollery.
Here,
that's our we need the Geek Radio, the we claim this list, so whenever we come up with anything we think might go somewhere. You know, a version of the kind of stuff that's happening on Twitter and that, where people, when somebody's got a different opinion and you get just swarms of, where people are just overwhelmed by the negatives.
Well, people are also talking about just even, you know, how hashtags and things are starting to fail on Twitter, because you had, you know, like a couple of groups come up, and I believe like with Ferguson, and I didn't actually go and see what was being said, but more or less, you know, there were a couple of movements that came up where people started, you know, using a hashtag, which makes things show up in certain filters under Twitter, you know, or under, you know, Twitter clients. And these opposing groups came up and co-opted the hashtags, and then more or less just did the denial of service to drown out the message of people using the hashtags. So, you know, there's always, I guess, ways to subvert systems.
Yeah, it just and that's why that was the thing why Reddit, at least the sort of main levels of it, just hit me. That was sort of striking, because, you know, I've participated over, you know, the length of this show, I've participated in boards on different sites and that, and it's very rare to have them get a culture that isn't vulnerable to where the loudest and angriest mm-hmm. get, you know, push out everything. I see it on Facebook, actually. I mean, I had today, I finally, it was one of those where after I looked at somebody's post and I didn't want to answer because I didn't want to be in the fight on it. And so finally, apparently now there's a thing on Facebook where you can not see their posts on your news feed, but you're still their friend. So they don't know that you've basically, like, ignored them. Yeah, you basically unfollowed them, and so they're still your friend.
You're still connected as a friend, but you're not following their updates, so they don't populate your news feed.
And so you don't see them, because they just had – they had very different views. And it's one thing when – you know, I'm okay with alternative – with views that I don't agree with, because when I can learn from something from them. But when there's somebody that I've engaged with and they can't – have a back and forth discussion, you know, the ones who keep moving to a different subject to try when they've lost, when they know they've lost, they move to something else that fits in their politics, or else they just, you know, I know that it puts it towards the right, you know, the ditto head thing.
Right.
But this deal where I really, one of my just sort of pet Facebook peeves while we're on it is people who don't really seem to know anything about the subject that's in the thread, but who support it because there's some keyword was in it that they liked.
Yeah.
You know, Benghazi or whatever, or
repost
or torture gate, or what, you know, anything with the word gate on the end of it. And they just jump right in. And when two people are having like something approaching a conversation about it, and then you get a flood of people who have a position who just are like, no, I'm on his side, and I'm going to just call you a libtard or a repuclican or whatever. It just it wrecks it, and I'm just surprised that Facebook doesn't seem to have any mechanism to self-police, and so I don't know that that's ever going to go away.
Well, what I don't like on Facebook is, you know, I tend to not lock my stuff down, you know, so it's not friends only, so it's open. And Facebook will tell you if one of your friends comments on someone you don't know's post. So, like, I'll post something, and then somebody will come in and make a comment. But then somebody I don't know who's a friend of a friend will come in and make some hateful comment. you know, to the post because they decide they're going to join in the conversation. I know one person, but I don't know you, but I'm going to insult you. I'm going to come over here into your house and
totally misunderstand whatever the real conversation was and make it ugly.
All right. Groovehouse has a couple of calls in the queue. And the second one he wants to bring to our attention since it kind of goes with our conversation. So Groovehouse, are you the Groovehouse?
Yes, there we go.
Who do we have up second?
All right.
First?
That would happen to be Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, I have a philosophical question for the experts about trollery.
Okay.
Now, I started on the internet about 10, 12 years ago, and I didn't know what a troll was. And I went to certain specific blogs, and there were people that made total strangers that said nasty things about what I said. And then that seemed to evolve into viruses, and then that seemed to evolve into malware, and now we've got the shutdowns of the major corporations, and then we had government hacks.
I don't think trolls,
Wait.
We're not going to wait, Gary.
Question. Now we have the Sony situation.
What
where
Sony
they
situation?
Went into Sony and.
Oh, the hackers.
Is this a phenomenon of the internet affecting people, or is this a phenomenon of people affecting the internet? Because it seems like people and the internet is getting nastier and nastier
It boils down to one thing, Gary. It's that people will behave a certain way when they're looking you in the eye, and they may behave a totally different way if they think they're anonymous.
But isn't it getting out of hand? I mean, we're going from saying mean things about people to hacking entire
governments.
I think that's a big leap.
That's a big leap. That's two different things. There's a criminal element in the world that will do criminal things, and then there are people that are just not socially capable of interacting with their fellow human beings. And that's unfortunate, but it really boils down to just the anonymity of the internet. You can go online, you have an avatar that doesn't even look like you, and you've got a handle. That's one of the reasons why sites like Facebook and Google Plus tried to push back on using handles instead of real names. Even if your real name was like made up, at least they would let that slide. But if like Groovehouse had struggles with Google Plus, and I'm surprised Facebook lets them have Groovehouse, because I know that one of my friends had a hand. It was a nickname that she had, was Kathy Cowgirl, and Facebook said somebody came and reported the profile, just said that's a fake name, and so they canceled her account.
Jeez.
So, but I think that, you know, when people are online, what you see, there's another meme, like, don't read the comments. I don't really like,
especially on news sites.
I don't like comment sections, because if you go and you read a perfectly salient article that's good, maybe whether you agree or not, it's a good article, it's well written, talks about the topic, and then you make the mistake of scrolling down and looking at the comments, it just gets, you know, depending on the site, you know, if it's a known liberal site or a known left-wing site, then all the comments are about how much they hate the right wing. And if it's a right-wing site like Breitbart.com or something like that, then the comments are all anti-liberal. And
well, even local stuff, it immediately goes, like, I hate reading the cron.com. You know, hopefully, Dwight, if you're listening, cover your ears. But yeah, it's like first 10 columns, you can almost play bingo. It's like, okay, first 15 things, someone's going to, you know, say racism, and then
Nazis.
Someone's going to bring out, it eventually goes full circle to Hitler and Nazis. Yeah, but it's like, wow. You know, I like to think that we've evolved, well, but then you read the comments, and no, not really.
The thing is, though, on the cron, though, aren't you most of the time on local media type things? You have an account.
I've seen some really
identified,
vitriolic things spout out from people that looks like the real names that have like 20,000 posts or 10,000 posts. So it seems like this is kind of what they do. You know, it's like
there's a certain kind of internet fame, I guess, that some people that don't have really any social, real-world presence. You know, it would be one thing if Jay Lee or Peter Hughes or Barrett Cannon got onto one of these things and started spewing vitriol. It would ruin your real-life reputation, but there are people that use their real names that have no real-life reputation that they care about. They're shut-ins or they're locked away in some trailer home or something, and that's all they do is they get on the internet and spew.
They used to have to work a lot harder to be known, like Rack Jite. To for those of you who follow KPFT for a long time, I don't know if you remember him. He'd call in. He was a very able debater.
Yeah,
and had a particular political persuasion. He was. I'm not. At first, I want to say I'm not saying he was a troll. I'm saying he was a very adept partisan for his opinions. But it took a lot of work, and he did it. And but now anybody with a kind of anybody with an internet connection,
right,
and a keyboard is kind of. I think, you know, one of the things is the internet is like Houston. There's another meme we can say, you know, the internet, the real world is kind of segregated. And by that, I mean, you know, most of us, unless you run into a celebrity on the street somewhere when you're traveling or in a hotel or an airport or some unusual circumstance, you don't see that. You aren't in their neighborhood. You aren't around them where you can see them. But on the internet, it's all one big neighborhood, and so everybody can be around everyone. You can follow a celebrity on Twitter, or, you know, and celebrity can be to whatever degree you want, from, say, a bottom level of, like, oh, us,
pseudo-celebrity
up to, you know, Oscar winner. And the sad part is, you know, since everybody can be in their neighborhood, you end up with things like, you know, like the photo hacks that got out, where the sad thing is, you know, they captured celebrities doing what a large number of just people in the general population presumably are doing, like taking photographs that maybe they wouldn't want out for the world and having them on their private devices and having them show up. But it's just sort of wide open. You know, the internet, the positives that we all saw at the beginning of, you know, where there's a certain equality and, you know, it's harder to, you know, your voice can be heard just as much as someone else if you're willing to put out the effort and all that. Well, now that's kind of there's been an awakening. The dark side.
Well, going back to the discussion about trolling and how people react or act on discussion forums or online, people really, I mean, the whole idea of being a troll is when they actually use the word trolling to say, like, well, you've been trolled, because people will go and make a statement that is designed to
right,
garner a response. Like if somebody's posting something and then somebody comes and makes a comment that's just totally inflammatory about, like, whatever the subject is, they're doing that to get a rise out of you. And then the mistake that people make, I think the mistake that people make, is they think that somehow they're going to be the person who can come in and reason with that.
They feed the troll.
They feed the troll. The troll says, I'm going to do this just to make it.
See, but a good troll is somebody that gives people the feeling that they can change them and strings them along for a really long time.
Sounds like a bad boyfriend.
Those are the ones. See, the ones who are doing it as a craft are different, I think, than your just like average mouth breather of whatever persuasion that comes through on some stuff. The ones where, you know, the part I guess that just gets me is the ones that the people where all it really is name calling. I mean, a good troll actually has to like understand the topic and the discussion.
It's like
so
jazz.
That they can come in and have the thing that's going to, you know, half the time, some of the time they're too good. And so you look at it and you go, well, obviously this person has just tried to push every single person in this thread's buttons by saying, you know, by pretending, by saying the opposite of
right,
everything they've ever said. Where then you get the other ones though, where it's just like, there's no argument presented. It's just, y'all are just jerks and retards and all that kind of name calling, and thinking that the part that I would really love to find that person and like put them on camera, you know, like live video feed, where you go to their house and it's like, we'd like you to explain. America wants to know what is your purpose here? When you said that, what did you think was going to happen next? Was everybody supposed to go, yes, my political philosophy that I've held for the past years is totally bereft, and your one statement was finally the thing that tipped me over.
In this late hour, do I see the error of my ways?
To join your side. So why don't you describe your side to us, kind of?
I like the movie, I guess, the end of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Not the best of movies, but they actually go around. They produced a movie. They go, like, to some message board. They get the names. You know, it's all nicknames.
It's movie
of all these 12 or 13 or 15-year-olds that, you know, just said really horrible things about them on the movie. And they go and they kick everyone's butt. They knock, knock, knock. Excuse me, are you, you know, Glee 1, 2, 3? Okay, boom. You know, they just take care of business. And that's kind of cathartic, I think.
Yeah, it's there's a fantasy realized for Kevin Smith was very
clever. He hit the nail on the head on that one.
All right, Groove House.
You?
I see that we have a couple of calls in the queue. We're going to take some chances here.
Let's roll the dice.
Yeah, see what they got to say.
You got it.
Who's the first one up?
All right, up first, we are going to start with Dave.
Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, I was toying around with the Roku 2 and the Roku 3. I decided to go with the 3. The question I have is the output on there on the HDMI, can you get a cable that would hook to RCA where it would take the yellow, the red, and the white?
Because
I don't have an HDMI TV.
They make HDMI converters that will convert HDMI out to VGA or VGA to HDMI, and I'm sure you could do the same thing with the RGB.
It's not just like most of them. I don't think you're going to get just like a little adapter. You're going to have to plug in a little powered thing. Usually there's a little box because there's some electronic conversion that goes in. It's not just taking pins and shuffling the pins. It's actually doing some processing on the signal.
Yeah, because RCA is analog, so it has to convert HDMI, which is digital.
I think you can find them for $30, $40, $50 if
Amazon.com has them available if you Google search HDMI to RCA. Yeah, they make one. There's a cable. They're not terribly expensive either. They're like less than $10.
Oh, they've gotten cheap?
Yeah. There's one there.
I saw for $4 or $5. Would that suffice?
Now, what did you see for $4 or $5?
He's talking about the cables. Yeah.
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 It looks like it will. It looks like it doesn't actually need a box. There's a cable here that does HDMI to VGA.
So you're doing the easy direction. If you're trying to go to HDMI, that has protections in it.
Oh, that's what we're using the boxes for. That's a $40 or $50 device. I'm sorry. I got it backwards.
But the problem is, now that will get you out to RCA, but that will not get your audio. So does the Roku have a separate audio out to get the audio to the TV? Because the RCA,
Roku 3 is a big fat HDMI cable, power cable, and internet cable. And that's it.
That's it.
But you should be able to have a cable that splits the audio off the HDMI.
Yeah, search for that too, because you've got video and audio carried over the HDMI, so you'll want to split it out to your RCA, that yellow plug, and then you also want to split it out to audio.
Is RCA just the one yellow?
The cable Jay's looking at, yellow's S-video, and then right channel, left channel audio is red and white. The cable that Jay's looking at, that he's telling you to go find, actually will do that.
Although, are you trying to hook this up to a TV that's like high def and that, and trying to keep?
It's just an older one that has the red, white, and yellow.
That's the cable I'm
looking at right now on Amazon. I just did HDMI to RCA, and it's less than $10, and it does HDMI out to red, yellow, and white, as well as a monitor cable. If you're interested.
Would I be better off maybe just sticking with the 2 and forget the 3, the Roku 2, since
it's
it
Roku
goes...
Roku, Roku, R-O-K-U.
Did you buy one yet?
No, I was going between, I was going to stick with the 2, but then they said the 3 was much faster and it was, more up to date, so I was going to try to go with that, but... I don't have an HDMI TV.
Yeah, but assuming you might get one, it wouldn't hurt you to have the latest technology, but,
the prices are so, I don't know what you're looking at or where you're going to purchase it from, but, when you find them on sale, the prices are so marginal between the 2 and the newest. I would get the newest and get the cable adapter, because that way, when you do go and you get a bigger TV in a hand, a couple of years down the road, you've got the newest and you don't have to go buy another device. They're pretty good. They're good about updating the firmware, and they're good about supporting all the way back to the first generation.
The only way I would suggest differently, and I'm not, I think that buying the newest is smartest. But if what you were looking at in the future, like in the next year or two, was that you were going to get some other TV, and this one that you're hooking the device up to is going to go into a bedroom or a guest room and still be used the same way, then get the 2 and keep it with that TV, and then when you get a new TV, get the latest and avoid all the messing around if it's going to be kind of tied to that TV.
And if you think you're going to have that TV for a while.
Would I have to have two accounts in that scenario or no?
No, just one account. You don't even really get a Roku account. What Roku does is Roku allows you to log in. For instance, if you have an Amazon account or a Netflix account, you would put in your Netflix credentials or your Amazon credentials, and then it doesn't matter. Just like, you know, you can log into Amazon from more than one computer, you can log into Roku from more than one. I'm sorry, you can log into Amazon from more than one Roku device.
Right. So, like, for example, I have an Apple TV in the main room. I've got an Amazon Fire Stick in the other room, and my wife has an iPad. And all three of them are logged into the same Netflix account. And Netflix, for example, will allow you to set up user profiles. So if you have one person who's using Netflix on this one device, all the recommendations will come for them. So, yeah, basically all Roku does is it gives you access to streaming media apps that are available on the Internet, like Pandora, Netflix, Amazon Video, and that kind of thing. So you don't really get a Roku account, as Barrett mentioned. You have to have accounts for the other services.
So I was thinking whatever was free, I was going to get it and then eventually go into...
There's some free stuff.
Like Hulu's free. They're actually... Roku's... They've got probably... Now, not all of it's mainstream TV. A lot of it's not mainstream TV. But they've got like 50 or 60 dedicated channels from everything from like This Week in Tech has a channel to, if you like gaming, there's that. If you like news, there's that. There's a lot of specialized content things. But if you're trying to like, you know, kind of cut the cord, like some of us have done in here, you're going to have to probably shell out, you know, anywhere between 10 to 20 bucks a month to pay for services if you want to get the broadcast TV stuff. But there's a ton of free content, and especially like if you're first getting into it, there's enough free stuff out there to keep you busy for a while. It's not really until you kind of get caught up with all the old stuff that, you know, you start to look around for content.
Okay, I'm going to go. I'll start with the three then. I'll go ahead and order that and then see what happens.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you for your call.
Sure to find that cable first. Make sure it exists before you get it, because then you're going to have to buy a
new
TV.
Now, hold on. Should we look? I wonder if Roku has a palm interface. We should look at that.
No, but there's an app that allows you to run all your palm applications on a Roku.
I remember I did lose my first Roku remote control, and you can actually, I know you can still do it with the old ones, but I'd have to Telnet into it and then send commands over Telnet, like change the channel, do this, do that. But it worked, you know. And then I got crafty and I actually would, you know, secure shell in for my phone. I'm like, okay, now it's kind of remote control, but it's command line remote control.
All right, Groove House, let's see if we have another call in the queue. Let's see what that's about.
All right, up next is Tim.
Tim, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Yes, I wish that I had a real technical question for you, but I do not.
All right, thanks for your call.
Don't hang up on me yet.
Okay. Not yet.
All right, give us what you got.
I have just been doing a lot of thinking, and this has been several years of this. And I've been paying attention to how this cell phone technology, computer technology, TV technology is all seeming to be tied in to an incredible, of course, we already know, network of information.
Yes.
And I am curious as to your views, not necessarily that, it means anything, but your views on the fact that, and I am not a conspiracy theorist, but you know where I'm going with this. You already know. But there seems to be a general thing that is happening that means that everyone is so connected that, you know, with a push of a button or a push of a couple of buttons or buttons already pushed.
There's not even a button anymore.
Okay, just respond.
What was the final conspiracy? Yeah, where were you going? Just so we don't jump all over it. Because I think this is going to Bigfoot.
Jump all over it. Where I'm going is that, you know, if we become so complacent and so dependent upon the technology because it is so convenient and so incredibly blessed in our lives, then all of a sudden we wonder why everyone that we are being tracked.
Well, I mean, okay, so is your
sort of the trade-off between...
Well, let me ask, let me clarify. So is your question, are we compromising our privacy because of all of this connectedness?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, because that is a more clear idea of what I was trying to say. Yes.
Yes. Well,
you know, like, we seem to give up a lot to gain convenience.
Well, I think that's exactly the case, that, you know, when you engage online, whether you're visiting web pages or you're sending email or you're talking to people on the phone, information from you is going out onto this network, and it has the potential to be intercepted and used and gathered and collected and manipulated in any number of ways. But that's kind of, in my mind, that's kind of the nature of the beast. It's the whole idea of connecting with people. If you go out in public, you know, you're subject to getting your picture taken. When you use your credit card, your banks are tracking your information. If you write a check, you know, and there are people that are interested in that data. So, yes, that's something that's part of being online and part of engaging in this technology.
Although another piece to this, I think, is if you look back sort of through history, at the beginnings of things, it's disorganized and not, you know, and to use an example, immigration, because there's been a lot of talk about immigration. I'm not trying to bring it up as an issue, but
no,
you'll see my point in a second. To immigrate to America, you know, our ancestors who came here in the, like, 1800s, if they came before 1850-something, there was no – you just showed up. There was no visas. There was no – you bought a ticket to America. You showed up and walked off the ship and went and, you know, found a place to live and all that. There was no paper – you know, I mean, there was the paperwork of that you arrived, and so there's those kinds of records. But that was kind of it. And then, as time goes on, that kind of, so what country you were in was not regulated like it is now. And as time went on, then rules and conventions and things grow up around that make it, that give it some structure. And I think my thought is that, in a sense, right now, those borders between what's your information and what anybody can do anything they want with is a lot more permeable than maybe it's going to be in the future. I think at some point people are going to decide that, okay, we need some rules here that have some teeth that structure what you can and can't do with other people's information and how you use it.
I think there's a backlash to that going on right now, especially, you know, like post 9/11 with, you know, the governments with the NSA spying on everything, you know, with the CIA doing what the CIA is doing. But I guess the point is that the internet was designed from the beginning, not with security in mind, but with robustness in mind. It was, you know, designed to share information. It was accessible, is what it was designed to do. So a lot of people just jumped on there, started putting all their information on there without really thinking about what the technology was. You know, people get Facebook accounts without understanding how to code or understanding how to do a lot of stuff, you know, because it's all been broken down. It comes on a phone. You go buy a cheap phone and you've got the internet, whereas it wasn't necessarily like that, you know, back in the day. And a lot of that, our government's done a lot to erode the security, you know, in the interest of, you know, like I mentioned that the NSA, they've done things to erode different encryption protocols and, you know, like the salting of different, you know, initialization vectors and things like that. And the issue that we get into is when they start breaking those systems and when they start doing that, there is a tail. So, you know, what the government has today is what the criminals will have in 5-10 years, you know, generally is how that works.
Yeah.
So rather than them, you know, building things stronger and saying, hey, Microsoft, we see that this is an issue, instead of sitting on it and using it for them, they could be making things stronger. So I think that we've come to this breaking point where we know that they're in everything. Everyone that works on the internet, a lot of people feel like, hey, the internet's broken, this stuff isn't working, we don't have privacy. And I think there's going to be a second round of secure protocols, you know, like we're looking at secure DNS now because we know DNS's work, you know, is you know, kind of a little bit broken too. I think we're going to have to start building an encryption and some kind of, you know, trust and assurance into, you know,
well, there's
any kind of, any, well, kind of,
and on the human side now it's starting to become against law revenge porn. What's that? That's somebody putting up a picture of somebody else in maybe not wearing what they would normally wear for pictures.
Okay, well, if you don't mind, that is BS. I mean, that is just somebody taking advantage of the technology.
Well, the thing about it is, though, going from a just totally legal perspective, if that person, if the subject of the photo gave the photo to somebody else, you know, And you know, so they had the right to do what they want with it, and then they do something horrible with it. In the Wild West thing version of things, well, then, yeah, they have every right to do that. And now, though, it's starting to change to where they're starting to make rules about those types of things.
Let me carry it down just a moment more.
What's that?
So that is that our cell phones are accessible pretty much from any point of view who has the technology.
Right. Well, that's absolutely...
And if I take a picture of myself and my wife having a fun moment because we want to view it later, it could end up out there.
It could.
But that could happen if you did a painting of you and your
wife. Yeah, but it's not the same. The thing is, Google doesn't have it. Your phone company doesn't have it. I would suggest anyone that wants to do that, go analog, buy a film camera, don't put that online. Get a Polaroid. Instant gratification.
I understand that, but however... Because of the convenience.
Well, that's the trade-off. That's the trade-off, isn't it?
Place where they are comfortable saying, "Hey, man, we can just do this."
Right. Well, that's the trade-off, isn't it? That's the thing. People are very interested in the convenience, digital photography, digital recording, the convenience of being able to put information into a website and get product. That data is out. It can be out there in a heartbeat. And it's also hard. I mean, you talk about rules being in place to protect your privacy and protect that information, but it's not like, somebody steals your data and the squad car sitting on the curb sees somebody going by with a truckload of your information and pulls them over and arrests them, or they don't get to go to the pawn shop and say, "Oh, hey, look, it's all of Barrett's personal data here. We'll return this to him and arrest the thief." So your data can be had by people who are clever or not even that clever, and you would never know they even have it. There's no way to really police that and say,
physically tangible. It's not like, "Oh, someone stole my car."
If the NSA was to come along and say, "Okay, you know what? We've been spying on you, but we're going to dump all this data." And they're going to have some big red button on a wall that they're going to push that says data delete. It says delete on it. I mean, you have no way of proving that's true.
Understand something. I'm not scared.
Right.
I am not scared. I am only trying to understand, and I am really interested in whether anyone else is paying attention.
I think everybody is. I think that what we're having right now is you're bringing in a large chunk of the population of the planet onto the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Is a pretty big ramp up. And so you're still, and it's relatively speaking the early days, and so there's still a whole lot of people who something happens, their picture gets put up on a site, they have no idea that how it got there or why people are using it for good or bad, a meme, the Star Wars kid or any of the other memes like that, and they go, "Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that could happen." Well, the time between now and when there's not really anybody who doesn't know that that can happen is drawing to a close at some point. And then either the technology will be put...
Well, obviously, this dinosaur is understanding it.
Right, which is a sign of how it's sort of percolating through to everybody. A lot of some stuff that we don't not to open another branch of speculation, but think about the kids who are growing up in this. They know they swim in this. This is the atmosphere that they have known their entire lives, and they understand it in a way that is just, it's a part of their consciousness. It's a part of kind of everything for them. And they've never known life without it. They have a very different view than those of us. I mean, the older you are, basically, the more different your view is of what's going on.
Look, I'm 65, and my daughter, I have a younger daughter who just turned 12, and it scares the heck out of me.
Well, there's not
scared the heck out of
no,
me.
No, but there's reason to be concerned, and there's reason to try to educate kids. But there's two sides to that coin, because as Pete mentioned, there are kids that are growing up in this, and they expect that their face is going to show up on Facebook. It's going to get tagged. Their actions are being scrutinized by 1,000 cell phones. At any given event, everywhere you go, you're on camera. The potential to have that your actions shown to the world is there. So it's up
well, they're
to
also
the...
taking 10,000 selfies of themselves and uploading
them. Yeah, they're doing
them.
Their own PR.
They know their faces are out there because they're putting
them. That's what I'm saying is that there's a large subsection of those people that know this and don't care. That's just the way the world is. And those, it's almost like, you know, there's a whole, those of us that are older, like yourself with your young children, you have your mindset about it, and you're thinking, well, this is troublesome.
Yeah, it's a violation. They have my picture where the other side is, no, I'm famous.
I need to get it out there more. Yeah. I mean, the cool thing on this is, you know, as far as history goes, everything, we've got recorded history, we've got written history. You know, you get into somewhat personal, like, daily lives, and you find, like, an old manuscript. We're the first generation, really, that people are going to be able to come into and see what our daily life was, what our minutiae was like, exactly single thing we ate. And they're probably going to be really bored. I would hate to be a history student.
There's also a big difference between being violated, right? Having somebody like take your stuff that was on your private computer and the stuff that you choose to put out there, right? There's a big difference. Mm-hmm. And so some people think, you know, these people who put stuff out there, they don't realize what they're putting out there. They don't realize how much information they're giving away and what they're doing. And there's a big debate around that because, for example, a lot of companies now, they realize people don't want to pay for stuff. So we can't get them to sign up and pay $5 a month or $10 a month to go to our site. But they figured out we can give it away for free, and if they use it a lot and put a lot of stuff on it, we can figure out who they are and what they do, and we can sell their information to companies that pay us. So basically, the consumers become the product.
That's Facebook,
the product. You're
that's
not
the valuation of Facebook is that they know so much about us that they'll
Google
be able
Google
to do
does
the
that
future
as well.
Of advertising.
But Google and Facebook both do that. But for me, I feel somewhere in between that because, I don't know, I've always had a little bit of a different view of privacy. Like when people talk about like, oh, don't put that online. Oh, don't show that. Don't do that. I'm like, I don't really care that much. Most of the stuff, like, I put it online, and I know it's online, and I understand that. I mean, I got on the internet a long time ago, and I understand how it works. And so for me, it's like, look, if I put this on here, I know
that. Expect that this may happen.
I mean, I may not be happy if somebody abuses something that I put online, but at the same time, if somebody comes up and says, "Oh yeah, well you know, in 1997 you said blah 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 blah," but yeah, I did. I said it on something that was public on the internet, and yeah, it's still there. So what?
Yeah.
But I think it's part of our social evolution, you know. I mean, one thing that's happening is that there is this global dialogue happening. So people are doing stuff. It's not turning out well for them because it's under the scrutiny of the entire population of the world. And I think that will my hope is that over time that will channel and kind of refine the way that we interact with each other.
Nobody cares for the universe.
Well, that music says we've got to take a short break. We appreciate the conversation, and thanks for the topic.
Hey, thank you all for the conversation.
All right, have a good night, sir.
Good night.
You know, I think it's interesting to watch happen. It's, I do tend to think that there's a lot of ignorance in the world, and maybe by letting it kind of reveal itself in such a mass forum, maybe we will evolve as a society and a civilization.
Well, you know, you think about your like your great grandparents. My great grandmother. There was at one point she rode in a covered wagon, and then she lived to be almost 100. She died in the late 70s. But so she went through, you know, the airplane and the phone and the television, all those things. Except for us. What's it going to be by the time you hit 100? What's going to have happened from when you were born? Yeah, we had black and white TVs, baby, or color TVs, but what's going to be there then, and how's it going to be different than what you imagined?
I'm still not going to have a flying car.
It's going to be the difference between covered wagons and jet planes.
Listen, we're going to take a short break here. We're going to do some station business, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Groovehouse.
Three sad facts. All over the world, more than 80% of forest cover has been lost to deforestation. Topsoil is lost much faster than it's being created, and a half of all species are threatened with extinction, mainly by industrial activity. Until now, past 300 million years. About one species was going extinct every 4 years. But now, scientists see one species go extinct every 15 minutes. This environmental destruction can only be changed when you act. Deep Green Resistance says standing up and speaking out is the only hope for our planet. To learn more, visit deepgreenresistance.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Usted probablemente ha estado en su carro buscando por coberturas de noticias o buscando alguna música nueva. O a lo mejor usted estuvo en su casa cambiando el cuadrante buscando algo diferente. Su radio probablemente se haya quedado en KPFT y permanecido allí. Si usted es un nuevo radioescucha de esta estación, esta es la manera en que la radio de la comunidad trabaja. Nosotros dependemos de radioescuchas, no de comerciantes, para obtener dinero que usamos para la operación de nuestra estación. Nosotros tenemos campañas de donaciones pocas veces al año, donde nosotros le pedimos a usted que apoye nuestro trabajo con una donación monetaria. Usted ha venido dependiendo de nosotros, pero nosotros dependemos de usted. Vaya a la página de internet www.kpft.org para hacer su donación monetaria. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston, and now as a presentation for an early Christmas for Jay's leaving and whatever else is going on to brighten your day, maybe not so much, we present this.
Here comes Krampus, here comes Krampus, yeah, 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 yeah. Here comes Krampus, yeah, 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 yeah. He will put you in a barrel, hit you with his sticks. Krampus, yeah, 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 yeah. He will stick you in his sack and throw it in the stream. Oh, Krampus.
Song gets more cheerful all the time.
So much fun. Yeah, we need to Kickstarter the Krampus movie.
Well, you
Santa
know,
has a friend.
It's amazing how popular Krampus has become in our culture right now. I mean, I remember when you first found that song, I had no idea who he was.
Yeah, I hadn't either. That was what. You know,
what year was that? That was probably 5-6 more years ago.
No, it was probably closer to 10.
Really?
I want to say 8
but
or
now,
10.
But now, like there in Houston, there was a Krampus pub crawl. There are Krampus gatherings in all over the United States now, and they're trying to, you know, everybody knows who it is or starting to know who it is, you know, who he is or what it is. It's very interesting to see this kind of thing has evolved. And that's also part of the internet. That's part of all of us being connected, you know, through social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook and having access to blogs and websites. And we learn about things that are interesting. Krampus being a Germanic folklore legend thing, it's kind of opened our eyes up to this other culture and another society's view of the holiday season.
Yeah, I think the world's getting smaller on that. And so anything that's kind of interesting and unique that's attractive to other people or intriguing or whatever is going to spread around and is going to be known by more people than before.
We've also become very, very hungry for content. There's that, you know, there's a certain group of people that are producing content, but there's just a huge number of people that are consuming this content. And they find something like this, they latch onto it, and then they burn it up and they move on to the next thing. So
the hipster locusts. Well, there's not a bear at time tonight.
I found something. Are you going to mention the Geminids?
What?
Are you guys familiar with this? The Geminids, the meteor shower that's coming this weekend. Everything is lining up perfectly.
Geminids? No, I got my flu shot.
That's good.
Geminids.
I'm actually looking at the weather to see what the weather's going to be like this weekend. But yeah, and they're a special kind of meteor shower. They actually just showed up in the late 1800s, whereas most of these are occurring. This actually is a new creation. And some predict as many as 120 meteors per hour are going to be visible, which is a lot. But a much more realistic estimate of 60 to 80 is still pretty impressive. The meteor shower happens this weekend. It goes from late December 13th, which is Saturday night, into the early hours of Sunday the 14th.
Cloudy and rainy. This
no!
Yeah.
This is like the one time you have to wake up, but you know, it's the weekend. It's, you know, finally a Saturday night. Everything's lining up. It's supposed to be spectacular, and we've got rain.
Looks like rain
time
Saturday.
To go camping.
Got to go out to like Brazos Bend State Park.
It could change.
This is camping weather.
It is camping weather.
Get out there, see the stars.
Christmas time is camping time.
We also have
here comes camping. Here comes camping. What were we going to say, Groove House?
Something about the observatory somewhere.
There's the not the Lowell Observatory, but there is an observatory out at
the
Brazos Bend State Park.
Is it the Brown Observatory or something?
You know, Brown's looking
at that George? The George?
George the George Observatory.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's rainy here, it could be. You know, the main thing is you don't really need an observatory to see there.
No, but it's
be pretty awesome.
But the reason that there's an observatory there is because it's a low light pollution area, and so if you go where the observatories are, you can get to a place where you can see phenomena in the sky without a lot of light pollution destroying it. Because if you try to watch the meteor shower from downtown, you're not going to see much.
No, even on a totally cloudless night. Well, in other sort of science-y news...
Science?
A few things. Well, NASA...
I'm blind!
Last week, there was talk about the Orion, I guess, where it didn't launch. But then they did actually get it launched.
Then they did launch it.
And that has been recovered. And that... Go research that one. Go research the NASA Orion launch, because the stuff that goes with that, you know...
It's the first
It was impressive stuff. Well, and they shot that way up high, you know, way out of the atmosphere, and then they slammed that sucker into the atmosphere, and the tech, basically it's like if you built the kind of moon launch stuff today with more of our modern technology. You know, certain things obviously they, you know, got right the first time, but they did recover the spacecraft Friday. It landed in the ocean. Instead of just having, you know, the Apollo ones just had, there was the one parachute deal. And if that worked, you know, there was three parachutes, but it basically came into the atmosphere and the parachutes opened and then it sank down to the Earth. The Orion had a sequence of 11 parachutes that would go and slowed it down in a very short period of time so that it could come in faster,
right,
and still land gently when it hit the water. But apparently they got it. It was about 600 miles off the coast of San Diego that it landed. They sent it up. There's footage and stuff you can find online. Next, we'll go out from the sun on NASA news, because that one was here on Earth. On Mars, they found much stronger evidence of water. Meaning much more chance of possibility of life in the past on there. They've seen places where there was like flows of water, like over long periods of time, rivers, lakes. There's strong evidence that the Gale Crater, which is where the Curiosity rover is, I believe it's Curiosity, had large lakes, rivers, and deltas on and off for millions to tens of millions of years. The geology shows that even when the surface water dried up, plenty of water would have remained underground. They've concluded that there were numerous delta-like and lake-like formations. And so the stuff, it's just kind of funny because we went back and forth with Mars, right? Oh, it's got canals on it. And, oh, no, that's all, you know, you're wrong. And then, well, does it have water? Oh, no, it's a dry and lifeless planet. Well, now we know that at some point it did. So, and they're going to take basically with water, you know, just like on Earth, you get the water comes in, it drops sediment, and stuff builds up over time. And so there's basically a mountain that this rover is at, and it can basically go up the side of it and read the lines and know what was going on. So that's kind of the next big thing happening with the Mars rover. And then last but not least, the New Horizons spacecraft woke up. No, it didn't like become sentient. It's not
V'ger.
It's not V'ger or what was Skynet. No, on December 6th, the New Horizons spacecraft woke up from hibernation more than 2.9 billion miles away from Earth, which puts it a scant 162 million miles from Pluto, which is what its mission is. It's going to give us real pictures. Well, somebody I heard a story on NPR about it, somebody talking about it, and, you know, he said, you know, you probably think that you've seen pictures of Pluto.
And you have
rocky, and he said no, because the best pictures we have are from the Hubble, and on the Hubble, the Pluto takes up about 3 pixels on a picture, and now we're going to have a craft be right out at Pluto, and take New Horizons left Earth 9 years ago. It spent almost two-thirds of that time in one of 18 hibernation periods designed to keep its systems operational. And even though the wake-ups have become routine, this one was the special one because it had to wake up to do this before it gets to Pluto. It's the last time it needs to wake up before it gets to Pluto. So it should be very interesting to see what happens when we get a close look at it.
When is it destined to get over there?
Let's see. January 15th mm-hmm. is when New Horizons gets close enough to Pluto to start taking measurements. By mid-May, it should send home the best images we've ever had of the dwarf planet.
They're comparing this to like the Mariner 4 flyby of Mars in the 60s as far as the kind of quality pics we're going to get.
Totally changed what people were thinking about Mars because of the information that you could get. It's going to look at the surface and atmospheric compositions of Pluto in hopes of learning about dwarf planets in general, and which we now know are more common in the solar system than rocky worlds like our own and gas giants like Jupiter combined. You know, there's a lot more of these dwarf planets out there. So, they're also going to study Pluto's largest moon, Charon, or Charon. They form a binary planet. Instead of orbiting Pluto, which is about twice its size, Charon circles around a fixed point in tandem with it, like two ice dancers holding hands and spinning together. And we haven't gotten to study a system like that before. So, just sort of funny because I guess it goes so quiet. You know, you think about that. So New Horizons left years ago, and now it's, you know, now the same week that the Mars rover finds, you know, real evidence of water on Mars in the past, you know, really clear evidence, and we test the Orion. It's just kind of you go for nothing for a long time, and then suddenly boom, lots of stuff. I guess since this is sort of a pseudo mini info shot, earlier we were talking about, you know, people stealing your data and how, you know, all these systems, you know, where we're, you know, your privacy can be compromised by all the stuff that's just kind of out there naturally. Identity thieves have been using the Domino's pizza ordering app to test whether stolen credit card numbers are good or not, whether the data. According to the New York Times, Brooklyn police officers were monitoring various usual suspects' social media accounts when they noticed the question, "Who wants pizza?" and the Domino's logo repeatedly popping up in those people's timelines on Facebook. I'm assuming this is just they're looking at public stuff that people put out there. When they checked with Domino's HQ, the pizza company acknowledged there had been a spike in sales in the area. Additionally, some people were not only making way too many pizza orders for one household to eat, but their successful orders were coming after multiple rejected attempts. One user made 2,000 ordering attempts in a single month, according to the police. So they worked with Domino's. The police worked with Domino's to determine which orders were likely placed with stolen card numbers, which came from people all over the country. Some folks noticed that their accounts were being used to order lots of pizza in Brooklyn and had contested the charges. In November, police rounded up 14 subjects, almost all male teenagers, over the course of 2 days. Some claim they were guilty of nothing more than receiving a pizza. I guess that's the nice version of swatting. You order somebody a pizza and have it sent to their house with a stolen credit card. Of course, not that's not good. But one 17-year-old arrestee told the Times, "Someone ordered the pizza for me. The address was at my house." He claims that a friend offered to send him some free Domino's, which is hard to say no to. But when he went downstairs to get pizza from the delivery driver, he was cuffed and arrested. Ouch. So, you know, it's good that, you know, that shows kind of all the things we were talking about, law enforcement and new technology. And because on the, you know, one of the things, the odd part is that they're, you know, I get where you go to where the pizza gets delivered to investigate, but I would think you'd want to know that the IP address that placed the order is at the, although I guess if it's over a cell phone, you wouldn't know.
Yeah,
except you know where the cell phone was. I mean, you just kind of, some of this stuff, it's like, yes, it gets easier to take that stuff, but then doesn't that raise a burden that the police should be able to tell? They should know if you were at the house when you placed the order.
This is the technology we need the NSA to share with the police. Like, pass this down, help them catch stuff like this.
Or some clues about, you know, how to know that because obviously, you know, I don't know if this guy was innocent or not. But the deal where a friend says they'll send you a pizza, well, that may be some friend who's not really a friend, but he doesn't want to have a pizza with a stolen credit card delivered to his house. And so then he offers you pizza, and then you're the one that gets arrested. Of course, you know, obviously it's pretty simple for the person whose, quote, friend ordered it for him to identify who said they ordered it. But
person getting a pizza kind of shit. Unless you've recently helped someone move or, you know, gave birth to someone's baby or did something large, I wouldn't really necessarily be expecting a
especially
pizza
when they're
to
not there. If they come, if they're there and it's like, hey, guy, I ordered us a pizza. Well, that's one thing. But, hey, I'm not going to come anywhere near your house and then a free pizza is going to arrive.
That's one thing I've stopped doing is I don't anymore. And I very rarely did even back in the day. I don't let sites store my credit card information, you know, on them just because everyone has showed a very basic inability to keep my credit card information safe, you know, just with all the stores getting broken into. You know, and Domino's is one of the stores that says, hey, you know, can we store your credit card information for easy processing? And I just, you know, assume now. I get nervous enough just giving them the information, you know.
The first
online.
Time.
Online, yeah, the first time.
No, a number of sites that, you know, I've started to order like pizzas online and things like that. And they do what they ask you for the, would you like to save your credit card here?
No.
Well, maybe not.
Well, what's funny is with an iPhone, you're experiencing that more because you're using an Android phone. Because with an iPhone, the retailers and restaurants don't want you to pay for your order online because Apple's conditions are, if you ordered the thing in app, they get a cut. So if you notice, if you have an iPhone and you've got the one that clued me in was the Wingstop app, because I've got an Android tablet and I've got an iPhone, and so I'd ordered myself some wings over time with the tablet, and they didn't save my card, but I could put in my card and pay, and then show up, and they just, you know, give me my wings and I'm out. And then I had my iPhone and had their app, and I went and did the order. And it's like, you know, I finished, and it's like, well, they never had me pay. And then you get there, and you have to pay. And it's because they don't want to share. They don't want to share the revenues with Apple.
I get that. HTML5 needs to hurry up and get here. I don't think you should need a completely separate app to order wings. I mean, come on.
Let's get websites, apps are the big new thing, right? So they
it is, but I think that's going to be a flash. I hope we eventually get back to write once, run on any platform. That's where I want to go. I think it's really to have to develop for desktop and mobile and, you know, what have you.
Apparently only hackers do that. Only black hat hackers know how to write once and then put it on all the platforms.
Called flexible design people. Yeah, I don't see why. How can people trying to fish and scam, they're not even into UI. How can they do better UI than like actual UI designers?
So I guess some other quickie news. Lenovo recalled more than 500,000 power cords due to spark and burn risk. That's here in the U.S. So if you've got a Lenovo, you may want to check on that. New stuff, there Samsung has announced a virtual reality headset for a couple $100. I think in partnership with it's called Gear VR. The device is dubbed Innovator Edition by Samsung, and the Korean phone giant clearly isn't joking around with that phrase. The product order page requires you to acknowledge that you're buying, quote, a, quote, device targeted specifically to developers or early adopters of technology. So that means that if you're thinking that this means it's mainstream, then no. And they want to be sure you're aware of that. But so if you've wanted to fiddle around with virtual reality, this might be a device that you want to read more about. And then this one's really cool. Unfortunately, you can't see pictures on the radio, but...
What he's about to describe fits into the palm of your hand.
Yeah, a nano drone. Now, see, there's a drone that I'm not worried about. The one that has mistletoe at TGI Fridays that, cut somebody's head because it ran into them. That was, isn't that a clever idea? Hey, we're in a small restaurant with people drinking, so let's fly mistletoe around on a drone. That couldn't possibly injure anybody. This one, I don't think, could injure anyone. It fits in the palm of your hand. It's a four rotor drone. It'll fly for 5 to 8 minutes. It's 2 inches across and 3/4 inch tall. 5 to 8 minutes on a single USB charge at a distance of up to 150 feet away. So that's kind of cool. And it's under $35. So
whoa.
That sounds kind of...
That's like less than a tenth of what I paid for a micro drone that size like a year and a half
ago. It's called the Nano Drone from Morrison Technologies, so you can look that one up. I saw it on Uncrate.com, so if you want to...
There's a lot of pre-box stuff out there, and it's really cool, but now the FAA is getting into the business of saying what you can and can't do with these things, which it's about time, I think, when just a handful of people were doing it. But I think, like, was it at UK, at Heathrow or some London airport? A pilot reported a near miss with the drone, almost had a drone strike, and then on
there
the criticality level, it was the worst severeness you can list.
Someone near Kennedy, I think, or Newark, there was an incident even here in the U.S.
I think these drones, these are the drones. So I think the big drone that
these
Pete's
are the drones you're looking for.
the drone that Pete's worried about is going to get over the house, and then they're going to drop these drones off. And these can actually look like they could come into the house, fly through some air conditioner vents, you know, actually see what's going on, do surveillance, run back out, hop on the big drone, and they're out.
Oh, that's that could be true, and they could all.
They're also doing swarms, which is really cool. There's some stuff if people are at home in front of a computer. It's a GRASP, like grasp. They've got a lot of videos, but for the past 4 or 5 years, they've been doing small drones doing swarming techniques, and it's pretty cool to see like 100 of these things up there, like a swarm of bees, but they're
or
nano
like
drones,
the end of
drones.
The final Matrix movie.
Yeah.
If you remember?
No, I don't. I blocked out all that movie. Along with Flicked.
At the very end, there's all the little individual machines, and they all like come together and form this like giant baby's face that talks. And then I guess last thing, this is a Comcast one that I just think is sort of an interesting sign of things changing. There's a new thing from Comcast called Ethernet at Home. And what it is it allows an employer to extend Comcast Ethernet service from their corporate facilities to telecommuters' homes. So instead of logging into a VPN and connecting across the public internet to your work, employees who use it can get secure access to the enterprise Ethernet network instantly, the same way they would go online at work, Comcast said.
That's not dangerous at all. No one's going to plug in a Wi-Fi
at home.
Service
became available across the Comcast business network on Monday. Let's see. I don't know if they want to, if they say enough to tell us how well this works. Ethernet at home is designed to make telecommuting identical to working on site, except obviously at a whatever connection speed you and you pay for this service separately. It's available at speeds ranging from 2 megabits per second to 10 megabits per second, and all services are symmetric, meaning they run at the same speed in both directions. Oh, and Ethernet at home, now that you were all hyped and you were going to go ask your boss, it's $200 to $800 per month, but it's not like a typical home broadband service. It comes with a service level agreement to guarantee you'll get that level of bandwidth all the time and all that kind of stuff. But it's just the thing that struck me as interesting is that basically it's a, you know, instead of having a VPN where you have to roll your own and there's all this extra support kind of stuff, this is a it means there's now a company offering this kind of work at home structure to extend corporate networks.
So they're like repackaging fractional T1s to the home, like dedicated.
Yeah, I wonder
circuits.
If they're truly dedicated. If it's a dedicated circuit, that would be worth paying $800 for. If it's a repackaged VPN,
yeah, it's just
no.
A VPN that they do and they're in charge.
For $800 a month, I'd rather get fiber.
They don't say it's offered across 20 of the 25 U.S. of 20 of the top 25 U.S. metropolitan areas. It works across the company's existing network, so the cable going into a user's home doesn't have to be upgraded.
So yeah, they're piggybacking it. They're encapsulating it, putting on the plain net, and then I bet they're not doing any kind of port security, which means that, you know, you get home, you can plug in a Wi-Fi, and suddenly, you know, IBM corporate offices, the neighbors can get on it. I'm sure I'm making that a lot more simplistic than it probably is, but that worries me. I don't know if I'd want
to
extend
about.
Into users' homes.
You would hope nowadays, if you're going to offer a new service like that, you would think that there would be some thought put into how that.
You would need to be able to lock it down to MAC address. I would assume
it would work. Yeah, where there's something where it's your work computer is the only one that
you
can.
Just make
yeah,
sure
yeah,
the first.
To it.
Just make sure the first device you put on it is a router.
So and then I guess one that might be worth some talk. Some it was mentioned by one of the callers. North Korea. There was the big hack at Sony Pictures, and they released movies.
A terabyte like or two of data. Yeah, three movies that have not yet been released. A ton of emails
and very private and, you know, confidential Sony data got released. Now the deal is, in case you hadn't heard, there's a movie called The Interview with Seth Rogen and James Franco, and it's a weird comedy where they play a reporter and a cameraman who are asked by the CIA to assassinate the leader of North Korea. So that's over here. That got announced. They've made the movie. There's been ads on TV for it. And then Sony gets hacked. A major, you know, major league hack. Not
biggest one in the history of corporations. I mean, this thing
is
huge.
In the history of Sony.
That we know about.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, and then all this information gets released. And then the hackers have said that it'll be worse if the interview gets released. The best thing was a spokesperson quoted by the North Korean Central News Agency said that the country was not involved in the hack and did not know why Sony was singled out as a target. However, he suggested that it, quote, might be a righteous deed of the supporters and sympathizers of North Korea who are joining its efforts to put an end to U.S. imperialism.
We think it's awesome.
Because when I think America, I think Sony Pictures. Yeah, Sony, because they're all American. Harajuku.
What other country would like be, you know, working with South Korea to do that? North Korea. Yeah.
China.
The deal when they say it was people rising up to support the sympathizers of North Korea, I think that pretty well means they did it.
What was the name of the group that stepped up and took credit for it, for the Sony hack? Do you guys know? I think it's out on the net now. I think it's all public. It's like Masters of Somebody.
While Barrett's looking that up, code found from the attack is said to be similar to that used by North Korean hackers during hacks on the South last year. In today's state, in the statements, this was last earlier in the week, a North Korean spokesperson called the interview, quote, a film abetting a terrorist act while hurting the dignity of the supreme leadership. Mm-hmm. It had previously called the film an act of terror and an act of war. and you just kind of go, of course you know this means.
That's how England responds every time somebody uses the Queen in a comedic bit in any movie.
That's why the Germans came after us in World War II, is because of Bugs Bunny. I'm kidding.
It's a Lizard Squad, and they didn't do the big Sony hack, but they're the ones that just took down the PlayStation Network the last couple of
days.
That
was a while back? Oh,
yeah.
This is current?
They did it again. So, yeah, they had a couple of large DDoSes on the PlayStation Network a year or two ago. Yeah, another one happened a couple days ago on the tail of the big Sony hacking.
Okay.
And they're saying, hey, you think this is awesome? Just wait till Christmas. So I think there is a big, you know, if you're getting a PS4 for Christmas morning, you might want to open it up, you know, the night before and get some game time in before you're just in solo
mode. And get your personal data.
Download, yeah, download. Get your updates. Make sure you can get your games downloaded. And then batten down.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be another Lion King Christmas, which that back in the 90s when the Lion King was the big movie, Disney had a game for the computer game for the Lion King, and they screwed it up. And so Christmas morning, that hundreds of thousands of families with their little kids got the Lion King game, and they went to their computers to hook up and play it. And you can look up the rest. It's one of those, I'm sure there's an extensive Wikipedia entry on the Lion King game and how and what a disaster that was for Disney. So,
poor Disney.
So that explains that reference. I know that some stations, there's the policy where when they, like NPR, where when they say somebody's name, they have to, like, give a short explanation of who they are and all that. We have to do it when we make a joke. It's in our contract.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to join in the conversation. We've had a couple of good calls tonight. We do appreciate people interjecting their thoughts with us this evening. We're covering a wide range of topics and always happy to either readdress some of the ones we've covered already or explore some new ones. Did you have something, Barry?
No, I did. It looks like that movie that Pete was talking about, that's actually scheduled to be released Christmas Day, which is probably, that's probably why they're going after the PlayStation Network Christmas Day. I bet they're kind of, you know, because they're saying, it also just could be they want to ruin Christmas for some people.
Yeah.
But that looks like it's right in line with the movie as well.
There you
possibly
go.
Could be coincidence.
Well, I know you're traveling, you're coming up on traveling pretty soon, Jay. Is there anything, have you changed anything in your travel tech for this, in this prep for, you know, you travel regularly, so.
Yeah, it's, I've got the tech kind of fine-tuned. It's, I'm going to carry less camera gear. When I went to Iceland, obviously that was really about, you know, spending 2 weeks on the road and photographing everything you could conceive of. In London, because of the nature of how we're going to be moving around using public transportation, so forth,
yeah,
I'm not going to want to carry a backpack full of all of my camera gear everywhere I go. So I've kind of scaled it down into different kits that I'd be carrying. We're going to, you know, have a base of operations in the hotel, which will be nice. But there's a lot of, you know, you know, depending on where you go, whether or not photography is allowed, certain galleries, yeah, certain museums don't allow it. Some actually allow you to contact them to make, to arrange for permits for photography. And I've done that. So, it'll, you know, it'll be the MacBook Pro. It'll be a couple of cameras, handful of lenses, and then chargers galore. And then, of course,
you already have your power adapter.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, when you go to Europe, the power, you don't have to have a power adapter so much. You just have to have a plug adapter so that your plug will fit in their holes.
Yeah, the English one is like a dryer plug.
It's the biggest plug they've got. So, you know, when you carry a handful for just general Europe use, they're small footprint, you throw them in your bag. When you get the ones for the UK, it's like you link them all together and you've got like a shotgun. So we got, you know, the nice thing is that a lot of stuff these days powers off of USB. So if I get power to the MacBook Pro and then I got a USB, two USB ports I can charge. So I can bring a USB hub and charge up all the iPads and iPhones and things like that. But all the camera batteries need their unplugged. So you've got batteries charging on all your walls everywhere. You know, got to unplug this battery so I can plug in the hairdryer. My wife. Hair dryer, not me, obviously. But yeah, it's because it's a winter trip, the tech's really going towards staying warm.
Well, I guess on the plane, do they have outlets at the seats, or do you have to have an adapter, or are you just going to watch the movies they show on?
A lot of the planes these days have USB power. on the, in their console, so you could get USB juice to your devices. I'll just watch what's on the plane. I don't tend to download a lot of stuff to my computer and watch that or anything. I'll just watch it. It's an opportunity to see that movie you never got around to seeing on a really tiny screen.
Although, well, what I've heard also, though, is at least somebody who had traveled a lot to Europe gave me the advice. I followed it, and it worked on my few trips that I did, which is when you go that way, you want to sleep as much of the flight over there as possible. Of course, I've traveled for business, and because it was so far, the corporate policy, it was a fat cat bank, I'll say that. So then you get on the plane, I didn't know it the first time, and it was business class.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So now you're just like bombarded with food and drink and offering you stuff, and there's more channels, and the screen is bigger.
So you don't sleep.
All this stuff. I was disciplined. I actually, fairly, as soon as I could, I told them I was
going to do the executive meal, get everything
took
up first.
A sleeping pill and tried to sleep, and it did help.
But, well, this is unfortunately the flight is in the evening, so I've already been up the whole day, so that may or may not help.
Well, if you sleep, it'll help. If you don't sleep, it'll be.
If I sleep, it'll help, but it'll be 8:30. The flight is at 8:30 p.m. So, and then. That's going to be having been up the whole day.
So it gets there like noon or something? Is that right?
Yeah, around noon. And it's about 10 hours over there. It's weird. It's 10 hours over there, 11 hours back. So I don't know how that works.
Earth spinning. Winds.
Is it the earth spinning? Yeah, because you're going.
Against the rotation of the earth. Damn you.
That's not. That has a small factor, but yeah, it's pretty much it.
I know. It's the Gulf Stream or the Jet Stream or whatever. The Jet Stream, not the Gulf Stream up there. But, yeah, I'll do what I always do, which is probably snooze a little bit on the plane, but not really sleep very well. Arrive exhausted, clear customs, go to the good thing is we'll be arriving. We can actually check into our hotel room.
That 6 a.m. Arrival is no good.
Yeah, we arrived in Iceland at 6 a.m. and really got lucky that the guy behind the counter at the hotel had the room open. And, he's like kind of being smart about it, but eventually just gave in and gave us a room so we could go later.
Sometimes they have a room like a where they'll lock up the luggage. Where
but you're still. I'm not going to leave my.
You're still a zombie out of the streets though for 6 hours,
just staggering around. Yeah, but it's nothing's more pathetic though than staggering around like a zombie with all your luggage too. It's like American victim.
Well, I'm looking forward to they just opened up the museum. At one of the museums, there's a display about telecommunications and the internet. So there's a new tech wing at the museum. There's a new thing at the Tower of London where the top part of the Tower Bridge.
Oh,
the two rails up at the top, the walkways up there have glass bottoms on them now.
Are you going to walk that over? How are you with heights?
I don't have a problem with it.
Cool.
I have a problem with climbing to the height. Once I'm there, I'm fine. But if you have to climb, like
I think for Tower Bridge, it's stairs though, so it shouldn't.
It shouldn't be a problem. No, but St. Paul's Cathedral, going up to the Whisper Gallery, I'll probably die. Cynthia's going to go all the way up to the roof, and that's like 500 and something steps.
Wow.
And they're tiny when you get up high, and you can't turn around and come back.
You're committed once you get a certain point.
So go ahead.
I saw this on someone posted this on Facebook earlier, but I don't know if this is a DMCA workaround or what, but someone submitted a bug report gotten it as CVE, which is like the official bug designation, like normal software, and they're reporting the bug, and I know I'm mispronouncing this, but is it Keurig?
Keurig.
Yeah, they make the coffee pods more or less, so they're the ones that sell the machines. They're not super high dollar, but they're kind of expensive. Yeah, and then they DRM'd the coffee pods more or less to where it will not do non-Keurig coffee pods.
Like HP printers.
Yeah, more or less. You've got to buy that stuff. So more or less, I think because the way that they worded this, if you just said, hey, we found a way to circumvent the security, this is how you do it, that would be bad. So what someone did was someone submitted a bug report and said, hey, this is bad. Here's how attackers can use non-Keurig coffee pods. And it's all out here. It lists it step by step by step. It's 5 steps. And then it works for version 1. It works for Keurig 2.0. More or less, and it's so simple, it's whatever, but it's interesting that someone did it as a legit bug report versus saying, hey, here's how you hack Keurigs. Now, someone's eventually going to go see this bug report and put it out there and say, hey, here's how you do it. But it's interesting right. that it's, you know, it's legit.
Well, yeah, because nobody can blame, you can't blame the person who posted it. It's accurate. Yeah, they're reporting a bug.
I'm still one of those, I'm still of the camp that, you know, if you buy hardware, or you buy something, it should be yours once you pay it off. So this DRM stuff, I think it's a little silly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm all about if you own it. Now, you can void the warranty, sure. You know, you can, I think
right,
if you do certain things, then you
take the risk.
Yeah, you take
yourself.
The risk of damaging it, because that's the thing. If I'm a company and I know that someone's been in there soldering, poking around, I don't know what they've done. They totally could have fried something. In most cases, they probably did. That's fine. But don't arrest me if I want to take something that I own that I bought and do something else with it.
Well, especially to make coffee. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about some kind of
Well, you're talking about a company whose revenue is not necessarily generated by the actual device they're selling
but by
the accessories.
Well, it's like razor blades, too. It's like, you know, I guess they kind of do with their proprietary mating systems, but, you know, I guess you couldn't buy a Gillette razor blade and then expect it to go onto a Schick razor. You know, those are all kind of proprietary, which is why I have to keep buying, you know, back when I was buying razors, I had to keep having to buy more because I would lose one and have to mate it with the other.
Right.
But coffee, come on, that's kind of a universal thing, especially, you know, with the pot. I don't know.
If you want to, well, on the other hand, if you want to make coffee, you can just get a coffee pot. There's no DRM there.
Yeah, or a French press or a AeroPress. That's the next, probably my next coffee purchase. It's the one that looks like a giant syringe.
No, those are nice.
You put all
the
coffee
press, yeah.
stuff in it, and the AeroPress is like a French press, except it's just kind of this big syringe looking thing, and you put it on top of your cup, and when it's done, you depress it like a syringe, and it injects your coffee into the cup. And then you're done, as opposed to pouring it off or whatever. You just make one cup.
It's the same method, though. It's where you've got all the grounds
all
and all
sealed.
The water
it's
all
totally
at once.
Air
well, there's
going to
be
the whole time.
There's
going
to be a whole culture of jailbreaking your Keurig.
Yeah.
Jailbreaking your HP printer.
So there's your future dystopia. Is you're jailbreaking all of your devices in your apartment? You know?
Working for a software company, you know, a lot of the money that we not a lot, but a significant portion of the money that we make is off of. Support contracts and maintenance contracts. So, you know.
That's a little bit different, though. I mean, that's ever so slightly different, I think, than, you know, holding, so then saying, you know, then selling me a car and saying, hey, you can only use Shell gas, you can only use.
But if you were to go in there and modify the code and rewrite it and then expect us to support it.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's the warranty thing. I wouldn't expect them to support the warranty, but you're not going to, if software's a little bit different. I'm like, if I install that somewhere I shouldn't have, you guys would probably come after me. Because that's a licensed product.
What were you going to say, Groovehouse?
Talking about the Keurig thing?
Yeah.
Now there's a little cup that you can put in there with your own coffee, and it's got the little DRM thing.
It's got a little foil on top. You could make them yourself.
Yeah.
It's pretty low tech. DRM's silly. I mean, the second you state that, who knows how much money they spent on it, researching it, building it in, doing the whole thing, and then it's, you know, in a little piece of foil. Subverts the whole thing.
Yeah, well, or here's an idea. It's really, really old-fashioned. Make sure your product is so good that people want yours and use yours. Make the coffee taste good, and then you don't have to worry because people aren't going to go, yeah, you know, if you – and don't overcharge. I guess that would be the other piece to it. You know, that's the best way to compete, I think.
They're trying to do vendor lock-in is what we call in the IT, is they sell you a solution, they make it where you can't really go anywhere else, and they try and, you know, hamstring you to where it's very difficult to go anywhere else. They're, that's what they're doing. They're saying, hey, you bought this solution, now you're stuck with getting everything
else. Yeah, and, you know, that idea happened, you know, the last time that was a big idea in America was the Gilded Age. When, you know, when all the big oil and steel and railroad monopolies, you know, because they were going to have everything. And look how that turned out for them. It's not, you know, it's not like that was successful over the long haul for them. You know, they got broken up. They got, you know, they went too far. And I hope that happens sooner rather than later now, because I think there's a lot of stuff that's a little over much, but that's beyond the show. But
a little beyond the show. I think they need to break up the broadband providers. I think that it's dangerous with just having.
They're certainly not competing.
Yeah, they're not competing with each other. You see these pockets. You know, there's just Comcast only pockets there. It seems like Verizon only pockets. And you know, back in the day when we talked about this a few shows ago, when Jay was around, and you had more ISPs than you could possibly name in a city or maybe even a state in large metropolitan areas. Now those mom and pop ISPs, those are gone, and you've got three or four major players, and that's how they can get away with throttling the net, with, you know, fighting net neutrality, with doing all this stuff we don't like, because they're the only game in town.
You know, you can particularly know they don't have competition when they spend time spending money on politics. Mm. For instance, at the state level, passing laws that mean that towns or cities that want to have their own
municipal broadband networks aren't
allowed without permission. Some of it's without permission, or else they just prohibit it. They're not allowed to have their own. And cities and towns that have done it, have done their own, you know, broadband thing, have been largely successful.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And is that under the guise of, I guess, government competing with private industry? Or what is their argument on municipal Wi-Fi?
They just make it illegal
because
it's just not a good use of taxpayer money or whatever. But it's all at the state level that they pass those laws because it's easier to control the legislature.
Well, it's less
there.
People to pay off versus having to go around every single town.
You know, Houston, it's a tough one because the city of Houston is so huge that if they wanted to have, you know, like municipal fiber, the cost of that would be like a small European country.
Well, even
the whole country.
Yeah, when I was involved with Houston Wireless, there were some initiatives to try and get everything wired up, and one of those was with Earthlink, and they were installing Wi-Fi and all of the smart parking meters and all of everything. And they actually, I believe it was Earthlink. I need to check my facts on this, so don't say I libeled them. But more or less, they could not get the work done in time, and they had to pay the city of Houston back like
half mil. I remember that when
it
was light poles and
that's when you know Houston Wireless kind of backed off, and we're like, this is going to be awesome. We're going to have mobile IP, we're going to have all this cool stuff, and then they just could not deliver, and that's kind of when it went dead in Houston. You know, so we had a chance of that. Again, it wasn't necessarily municipal, but it was sponsored by the city, and it was using city infrastructure, and someone else was going to come in and make a little bit of money off it, but it was going to be a good thing for Houston, and that didn't go.
Well, driving over from San Antonio to Houston, there's a segment where I listen to Austin radio stations, and it was the NPR station,
so
but they had the thing that made me go, is there some way I could move to Austin? They said, this segment, you know, the NPR has sponsors. We don't have sponsors on KPFT. They have corporate sponsors. And so the corporate sponsor was Google Fiber, 1 gigabit Ethernet, you know, 1 gigabit internet to your home.
Austin's getting lit up here in 2015.
And well, it started. They're rolling it out. They're rolling it out. If you're in the right areas of Austin now, it is available today. And you just kind of go, oh. 1 gigabit, you know, that makes you go all Homer Simpson.
We're just going to get you a really big reel of fiber, and we're going to have you drive from Houston to San Antonio to Austin, and we'll just do a local run back here to
Link
the station.
It up.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and so, of course, Austin's the only place in the state that has it. Now, that's not a municipal broadband thing, but once Google said they were going to do it, then suddenly AT&T rolled out. They're going to do gigabit.
Yeah,
so is Time Warner.
It's a competition thing. No one, broadband speeds have been stagnant for the last 10 years. Everyone else in the world is, you know, 2 times, 10 times faster than we are. We've seen no improvements, and it took an outside party to come in and kind of change the game for the other ISPs to kind of get in play. And that's my whole argument here. You just having one other player, you see what that does. Imagine if we had, you know, we opened it up.
Yeah, because they divide up the market. It's an oligopoly. It's not a monopoly, but it's an oligopoly.
Regional monopoly.
Where everybody agrees to not – they overlap just enough to say, yeah, we compete, and then don't compete, because then they each get to farm their own area that they control.
713-526-5738 if you'd like to be on the air.
We've got someone in the queue.
Well, that's what I noticed. That's why I said what I said. It's where I'm going. You caught on. You're quick.
I'm with you.
Found his angle.
All right. If you want to be on the air, we've got time left in the show to have it, maybe a little bit. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse.
Yes.
I see we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who is it? What do they want?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Paul.
Paul, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi guys, how are you doing?
Good.
Well, basically my question is, I have been a Windows user for a long time. I moved to Linux to learn as much as I could. And I wanted to try, Apple. So my thing is, I'm debating between a MacBook Pro with Retina display and without Retina display, 13-inch.
Okay.
So my question is,
you'll learn faster on a Retina. No, I mean, the I mean, what is your question? What is the concern?
Well, the one with without the retina display, it the motherboard is from, or the design is from 2012, so it's older. I mean, I don't care about the resolution much because I'm not into graphic design. I just want to learn everything I can about Mac. But my concern is basically it seems to be that every Apple device, it seems like after a certain amount of time, it becomes obsolete.
I wouldn't say that.
There's sort of a weird, in a way, yes, and in a much more important way, no. What happens is there's a new hot, cool new, there'll be a new model of whatever one you buy that has some features that are dramatically better than what you had, but you can keep using the one you've had for way longer than most devices. You know, I have a MacBook Air 13-inch that's right in front of me here in the studio that I got a few years ago, and there's been two different updates since then.
I think mine's even older than Pete's, yeah.
But Air Machine is still extremely capable.
It does everything I need it to do, and I don't ever have the moment where you go, this is not living up to, this isn't doing it for me. Before that, I had a PowerBook, or an aluminum PowerBook that I got in 2003 or something, that I used for 6 years, and then I passed it on to one of my kids, and they used it some more. So the obsolete thing is, if you've just got to have the latest and greatest, hottest thing, then yeah, it's obsolete. But as far as useful service life of it, there's a reason that if you go look at used Mac laptops, they don't drop to $200. Like a Windows laptop drops down into the under 500 really quick. A Mac one creeps down to it, and so you can find some that are 5 or 6 years old that are still $250-$300.
Right. I sold my 2009 MacBook Pro in 2013 for a substantial amount of money. I made half of the money back that I had spent on it originally.
Wow. And if it was obsolete, that wouldn't work.
No. So in terms of if you're looking to explore the Mac, the Mac ecology there, or the ecosystem, anyone you get is going to be perfectly suitable as long as it's modern made. There's going to be the retinas are going to have the nicer display, and they might have a few additional features for what you get. But it's just how much do you want to spend and what are you trying to do? You'll learn the Mac on anything that's made by Apple in the last several years. You could buy a refurb or buy a used one and have a perfectly suitable machine for learning on and experiencing the operating system.
Yeah, from my point of view, the weird part with the sort of dirty little secret on Macs is, if I was choosing today, if I lost my machine and I was going to choose, I would either want the top of the line Retina MacBook Pro, or I would get another 13-inch MacBook Air. The stuff in the middle, the differences aren't big enough for me. If you want to save a few bucks and still get the whole Mac experience, unless you're going to do hardcore, processor intensive, drive intensive, large files, or carrying around a lot of data, a MacBook Air is cheaper and it feels a lot faster with the solid state drive, or else get the solid state drive in the
MacBook Air.
SSD goes a long way on processing.
Yeah.
And it feels a lot lighter, too, not only faster. Once you carry around, the notebook that doesn't weigh 6 pounds, it's really hard to go back to carrying around something that hefty and that weighty.
Hopefully that'll help you. Good luck with your decision there.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Well, let's speak with Bernard.
Bernard, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi there. Yeah, I've got a question about running Windows apps and Java apps on a on an iMac desktop running OS 10.1. I'm aware that you probably got to run it, a virtual Windows window on there with some sort of VMware.
Well, is it a Intel Mac? No.
No, PowerPC for 10.1.
PowerPC, right.
Yeah.
So you can't do the boot camp with that.
You could try Wine.
Okay.
Well, you could do the virtualization, right? You could use, I wonder if Parallels will run in 10.1.
That's a hard thing. You're going to have to find something back.
I think a lot of the best ones didn't come out until Macs were running on Intel hardware so that they could do the... So
on the 10.1 stuff, you might, and this may sound kind of complicated, but there's a ports tree and there's some stuff that you can build from source. So even if someone's not actually putting out the most current applications, you know, for that architecture, the source code you should be able to compile.
There is, let's see.
I was hoping I wouldn't have to get into a lot of computer science, but.
No, the Wine just stands for it's Windows, or Wine is not an emulator, and it does a fairly good job of
running. Being the operative word.
Yeah, it either runs or it doesn't run. You know, it's one of those things, but if you can get it easily installed and run your app, and, you know, if it works, great. If it doesn't, don't give it any more time.
Right, okay.
10.1, that's the latest OS it can run?
That's the very... No, you should be able to... I would assume that if it's running 10.1, you could probably bump up to, like, 10.2 or 10.3 on a PowerPC. But that's probably, like, first gen.
The last PowerPC versions was 10.5, I think.
Yeah, 5.
So would that help the situation?
Probably.
Yeah, okay. Okay, great.
I
don't remember when, like, for example, VirtualBox. I don't know how far back they go. If you could find
VirtualBox goes back pretty far, dude. That's what I would search. Search for VirtualBox. Go look for some VMs first to see if you can't find something that runs natively that you can get Windows on there and go from there before you go down the Wine router or something a little bit more tedious.
Yeah, it's tough because that's so old that you're kind of going back into you're doing kind of archaeological research to find a. Because I know that I ran a Windows emulator on. My Wall Street PowerBook, which ran, you know, OS 9 stuff for before 10 even came out.
Well, I know we just got off the whole, you know, Apple obsolescence thing, but 10.1, that's in that region of obsolescence. You know, that gets kind of tough to work with.
10 years plus.
Yeah, that's the very first version. You know, that's back when it was bleeding edge. That was the very first version I ever had. So if you can bump up to 10.5, look at the memory requirements. Go get the serial number on the hardware you've got. There are ways to search to see what the most current operating system will support, and maybe look at one of those.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call. All right, Groovehouse.
Probably spend like $200 and get a better machine that can run 10.5.
Well, you could probably spend $200 or $300 and get a Windows machine. That would run Windows just fine.
Oh gosh, yeah. There's all kinds of like Celeron, you know, kind of mini PCs that you can buy brand new.
Assuming he's trying to run a modern Windows app. If he's got 10.1, he could be trying to run XP
stuff.
He's
trying to emulate.
Before
Windows
we take this call, though, I want to tell the story. I had this thing happen to me. Cynthia and I were out for a walk, you know, just doing like walk around the neighborhood, get some fresh air, a little exercise. And we're walking along and I'm about to turn down my street and there in the grass is an Asus laptop with no battery in it, but it's a laptop and it looked like it was in perfectly good shape, but it had no battery and no power adapter. And I thought, well, you know, I'll go on the internet and I'll buy a power adapter for it. You know, I'll be out 10, 12 bucks and let's see if I could reunite this with its owner. And I got the power adapter a week later, and I fired it up. And the people whoever lost it was very kind that they left a yellow sticky note on the keyboard
with the password.
And I thought, this is going to go well. And I fired this thing up, and there is no personal data to tell me who. I mean, I know the name of the person. I know the first name of the person who owns it by their username. But nothing. There's no email account configured. There's nothing.
Were they getting ready to sell it or something?
No browser, huh?
Were they maybe getting ready to sell it or something?
I don't know why it was tossed on the side of the road. It wasn't clean. It was just it was used by a young person, apparently. And there was a lot of My Little Pony stuff on there.
Well, maybe not a young person. We don't know that.
Well,
it's not
true.
It
could have been Flick's laptop. It could have been
a 40-year-old dude.
Maybe a parent got upset.
It's perfectly good. It's got Windows 8 on it. It's only got 4 gigs of RAM and a small hard drive, but it's a perfectly suitable laptop. And so I just want to tell people, if you have, you know, there's benefit to having personal data on your computer. At least if for whatever reason somebody tosses your computer off on the side of the road and a nice guy like me finds it and wants to give it back to you, you should have information on there that tells people how to find you.
Put your address as well as your password on the post-it note.
Something. I'm sorry we're not going to get to that last call. It looks like we are out of time.
Sorry, Justin.
Sorry, Justin, but maybe next week. Well, it's been a great show, everybody. Appreciate everybody tuning in and being a part of it. We're going to remind you that next week is the last show of Technology Bites for the year.
We will be back. We're just going to miss a couple shows.
I'll be gone.
So it'll be Peter Barrett, Groovehouse, Flicted, and maybe Lee Hutchins.
If he cares enough to show up.
You're going to come and get his Christmas present. All right. Well, we're going to get out of here, make way for the next show. But I hope you have a good week and a good weekend, and we'll see you, or some of us will see you, next Wednesday night. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Groovehouse. Groovehouse. Groovehouse.
Now is the time of year to think of doing good things. Charitable giving is one of the easiest ways you can give back to your city. Since 1970, KPFT has enhanced Houston. Your tax-deductible pledge at kpft.org ensures the region continues to enjoy the great radio that you have come to love. During the month, we're asking you to consider helping KPFT continue to do the things it does to make Houston a better place. From creating a space for local artists to being the only place to hear vital voices, KPFT gives you one more reason to be proud of Houston. Week one of our year-end giving campaign was positive, so keep the momentum going now at kpft.org. Thank you so much for your generous support this season. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Many of us know someone looking to sell or just get rid of an old car, truck, RV, or motorcycle. It may be just taking up room in the garage or driveway. Sometimes the cost of the repair just doesn't make a sale even worth it. And as we all look for tax deductions at the end of the year, you may want to consider donating that unwanted vehicle, running or not. KPFT can have the vehicle towed away at no charge to you. The owner, you get a tax receipt for deductions at the end of the year, a KPFT membership, and the satisfaction of knowing that old vehicle went to a good cause. It's a win all the way around. So just call toll-free 1-855-KPFT-CAR. That's 1-855-573-8227. No matter if it's car, truck, scooter, farm equipment, just about any kind of vehicle, we can take care of it. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR now, or visit kpft.org. This is 90.1 FM.